John Perry started his working life at 7 years old, sharpening knives for his father, a roo shooter and farmhand around Broken Hill and Tibooburra. His life changed when he first learned to ride a bronco, sending him off on a life working with horses and cattle. I joined John at his kitchen table for some stories of a life of hard work and adventure on stations across far west New South Wales and Queensland.
And lad, I end up here. I was born in Broken Hill in 1947 on April the 7th. I'm the younger born of twins and went to school here till I know 6 or 7, I forget. But yeah, and we moved to the bush to live with Dad, and he was kangaroo shooting and doing work for the graziers around fencing and tractor work and all that, mustering, landmarking, shearing, all that sort of work. Dad shot for skins in the early years, and we used to go with them as much as we could, and we all learned to skin, and in the mornings we'd be pegging the skins out on the clay pan to dry out in the sun, and then in later years when the pet food industry got going, we were shooting kangaroos for meat.
How old do you reckon you were when you first learned to skin a roo?
Oh, 8 or 9.
Yep.
We used to learn to sharpen how to sharpen the knives first. I remember when we were really small, yeah, even before we lived up there, we'd go with Dad. And we had these little, probably homemade knives. A bit of fancy bit of tin we'd found on a rubbish dump. This'll do me for a knife. And
yeah.
We used to practice using a steel. A sharpening steel with these
homemade knives.
And then we got to the stage where we'd try and sharpen them on the sharpening stone, which all it did was wear the stone out, and Dad was trying to sharpen good knives on them. And then we progressed to his old worn out knives. He'd practice with them, and we'd sharpen all the kitchen knives and the bread and butter knives and whatever we could do. We learned how to do it that way. A bit of a process to go through, but Dad could skin a fair-sized buck in a minute. That's from the time he put the knife to it until he dropped the knife. And he's been timed by a couple of blokes, his mates that used to go up there. But I had no way to do it in a minute, but I could get one off. But I had to be pegged out just exactly right for Dad to pass it, because there's a right and a wrong way. And we'd skin the roo at night, and you'd roll the skin up very neatly into a little ball and put them in the car and, you know, go on and shoot more. And then when you got what you consider was enough, pack up and go home. And in the morning, we'd get the nicely rolled up bundles out of the car and fold them out on the clay pan one at a time. And, you know, weather like today, they'd dry beautifully today. They dry like a bit of cardboard.
What was kangaroo hide being used for at the time?
Oh, well, yeah.
Everything.
Boots, belts, hats, anything. Yeah, it's a beautiful hide. Yeah, they're really good. They made excellent whips. Kangaroo hide whips, and they still make kangaroo hide whips to this day. And I've got a couple of them, but they're very popular.
So you hit 16 and you'd been doing a bit of roo shooting with your dad, but you headed off on your own. Where was the next stop for you?
Cordillera Downs Station, in northeast corner of South Australia. My brother, my eldest brother, was working up there, and he got me a job there. Flew up on like you used to call the Channel plane, was a DC-3.
Were you pretty eager for independence?
Anyway? Oh, yes, yeah, I would have. A lot of people had a hard, because I know blokes of my age coming from the city went up there, had it bloody hard because they had no idea of bush life. So like when I was 8 or 9, I had my own swag. I knew how to roll the swag. Whereas these kids from 16-year-old come up, you'd have to teach me how to roll the swag, you know, that sort of thing. I was still in the bush, wasn't I? So that didn't worry me much. I was in a different place. The job was different. So then the second day I was at Cordillera Downs, I learned how to shoe a horse.
What do you remember of of being a stockman? What was that life like? What was the
great life, yeah.
What did you love about it?
Oh, the open spaces and that, but incredibly hard. I mean, times, you know, you wonder why the hell you're there, and when it's stinking hot and you've got a shift cattle off drying up porterhole and riding around in the sandals when it's stinking hot, or over the Stanley Hills when it's stinking hot, and sharing a water bag. The funny part about this, you say sharing a water bag, well, you've got a water bag that holds perhaps a gallon, hangs around the horse's neck. But not all horses will carry a water bag. We had a Pommy Jackaroo, he had the water bag horse. I think we left camp about 4 o'clock in the morning, we were driving the cattle along, and every now and again he'd pull up, we wouldn't take any notice. Just pulled up and he'd go for a walk around and, you know, call the mate or something. And about 10, we decided it was time for us to have a drink. But the water bag was empty. Why is the water bag empty, Pom? Oh, I had to wash my hands. Every time he got off the horse, he'd have a little sip, but he'd wash his hand. We don't know, we just lost words, you know.
What's the longest run you ever did with a mob of cattle?
Oh, well, I'm not long. I did go cooking for a drover once, because the drover turned up and he only had half his team. The station let him, me, as a camp cook, and a young bloke as a horse tailor, and another bloke to go with the cattle. We went for about 3 weeks with the drover.
What was your favourite part of being a stockman?
Oh, ringing. You're a ringer, you know. Some people call you a cowboy. No, I'm not a cowboy.
What's cowboy the difference between a ringer and a cowboy?
Well, in Australia, a cowboy is a man that, he cuts the wood for the cook. He milks the goats or he milks the cows. That's the cowboy. He looks after the garden, whatever the cook wants, the jobs around the homestead. And the ringer is the stockman. He does the stock work, yeah.
And what was your favourite part of being a ringer?
Oh, just the variety of it, you know. The learning of it, you know. Not just going out and mustering cattle or running around. A lot of people get the idea that you gallop around like a mad thing on a horse all day and then you slide into the pub that night. But, you know, you got to look after that horse and hobble it out into good feed that night. Or I remember the first time I went out there, I think there was 10 of us in the camp. We had over 100 horses allowed to be hobbled out every night. And a couple of blokes go and get them every morning. Like, they'd take it in turns. And some places have a permanent horse tailor. All he'd done was look after the horse. He wouldn't do any mustering cattle. But we used to share it around. He'd go, you'd be mustering one day, and next day you're looking after the horses. And that's really good when you learn to ride a bronco horse. Was probably the best part of my life. Every year we had to go to attend their neighbour's musters. Like, you've got to attend their musters to get your own cattle back. And I went to Inamenka, and the head stockman there was an Aboriginal. Could hardly understand him. We were good mates. And he said to me, you ride the bronco horse? I said, yeah, not good. Mm-hmm. When we got back to the camp, we yarded the cattle and we were going to the camp for lunch. And he said, well, my horse has come in, like, to put the gear on him, eh? So he wanted me to put the bronco gear on that big grey Percheron draft horse. Yeah, beautiful horse, you know. Yeah, and that's where I really got my start. Because he made sure I was there every day. Yeah. We did, you know, me and the old grey horse got on well together, yeah. Ringo, yeah. I had a bad accident off a horse and it really knocked me around, and that's why I got out of the bush eventually, yeah.
That kind of work is quite hard on your body, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I had a few busters and, yeah. Mm. One put me in hospital for a couple of months, and I was left partly paralysed. And so, 6th of September 1976, I was drafting cattle, and I was in the middle of the cattle, and I don't know what happened, but next thing I woke up in Adelaide, I was closer to get me back to Harrowbury Station there than take me back to Cordillera Down.
Right.
So they took me there, and doctor's plane come. Flew me to Adelaide. I had to learn how to talk, walk, use a knife and fork and pull out again. 3 months in rehab in Adelaide. Didn't have to have an operation, then, just like I had a bruise in my head and I just had to dissipate on the time.
Yeah, wow. What What do you think makes this part of the world special or unique compared to other parts of Australia?
The countryside is ever changing. You can drive up to Toowoomba in the morning and drive back in the afternoon. It'd still be interesting, but totally different. You've got a variety, you've got sandhills and the creeks really intrigue me. Different timbers, different trees.
While you've been out camping or riding or in your time sort of alone out bush or in all the time you've spent out here, have you seen anything strange or surprising? Some people have talked to me about Min Min lights.
Oh, yeah, I've seen Min Min lights.
Tell me about that.
Oh, I grew up with them. Yeah, there's just a light that appears out of nowhere and you think, I think it's a car coming and it looks all the well like a car, but you can drive towards it and never gets any closer. Or you can stay there and park and watch it. I've been with my father and me and my sisters and brothers sitting in the car with him and watch this Min Min light and it'd be all over the place, never get any closer, never get any further away. Then all of a sudden just disappear. Yeah.
Have you got any theories?
Ball of gas or something, I reckon. I don't know. I don't know. No, I've got no theory.
No, not UFOs?
No. No, I don't think.
What do you think have been some of the biggest changes to this part of the country that you've seen in your lifetime?
There used to be 35,000 people here, and now what have we gone down to 17 or something? And I can't really get over where those 35,000 people lived. Yeah.
What are your memories of Broken Hill in those days?
Oh.
The pubs were a bit busier?
Oh, geez, were they busy? Yeah. I don't really.
They were wilder days?
Oh, in a way they were, but today it's still wild, but in a different way.
For tourists, as they travel on big, wide open desert roads and are doing the long drives, what are your tips for people doing those big, long drives?
Take your time. Travel to the conditions of the road. Don't look at the clock and think we've got to be so and so at such and such a time. Leave early. Give yourself time. And always carry plenty of water. You might think that's a bit silly, but no. Don't think just because there's a windmill out there, there'll be water there. There might be water there, but you might be able to drink it.
Thanks to John Perry for his time and stories. I'm Amy Volkowski. This episode of Meet the Locals was produced by Bushwitch Productions in collaboration with Jason King Media for the Sturt Steps touring experience. Sturt Steps is a touring route that covers over 1,100 kilometres in the Corner Country, outback New South Wales. This project is funded by the New South Wales Government and administered by the Milparinka Heritage and Tourism Association Incorporated. For more information, head to the website at www.sturtsteps.com.au.